Hello, Outlander fans. This is Jenny Coco Cure, and welcome back to Bannocks, Bonnocks, and Kilt, another Outlander podcast. I'm your host, Jenny Coco Cure, like I said. This is episode 6 of Bannocks, Bonnets, and Kilts, and I'm really glad to be back. You might be able to tell that I sound a little different this week, maybe a little crisper, maybe a little bit more clear. That's because I am talking into my new mic. I got my new mic a couple of days ago, was so excited to get it, and this just makes a whole big difference when it comes to recording. The microphone that I had previously, the one after my iPhone earbuds, was like a little cheap no-name condenser mic, and this one is still a condenser mic, but it's a Meteor mic. And anybody, I'm thinking maybe some of you probably have heard of the Meteor mic. I think it is akin to the Snowball. Everybody talks about the Snowball. But anyway, don't want to get too technical. Just really happy to have a good mic. And getting a good sound. I even have my fan on. You probably can't even hear it really well. At least I can't hear it coming back into my earphones. So anyway. Also, let me just say, I apologize for last week's episode, the detailed episode, the full recap, because it was kind of a hot mess. I was extremely tired recording that. I was doing it really late after work. And also, I think because I was pasting a bunch of clips that I recorded together, I think I double pasted one at the end where the same clip played twice. I'm sure people who listened to that was like, wait a minute, didn't she already say that? So, yeah, I apologize for that. That was a hot mess. But that's what happens when you try to podcast and you're sleepy. You shouldn't do that. That's one of the reasons why I have made a decision to only post one podcast per week, not doing a quick recap and then doing a full recap on Wednesday. I'm just going to do a full recap on Sunday, you know, because I've already watched the episode several times. First of all, fantastic episode, by the way, but I've already watched it several times. And the way Starz releases it, like at midnight, you get a chance to watch it all, you know, if you want to watch it all day, you can. So I've watched it several times. I know what I'm talking about now. So there's no need for me to do a quick recap and then do a detailed recap on Wednesday. It's just not necessary. So I have decided to just cut it down to the one episode and just leave it at that. So let's just get started now, okay? This episode of Outlander, it's Outlander Season 3, Episode 5, entitled Freedom and Whiskey, written by Brendan Mayer. Directed by Brendan Mayer and written by Tony Graffia. This is October 8th, the airing date of the show. And we start with a title card. And it looks like it's a pair of women's hands. Of course, they would be Claire's hands, and they are putting the finishing touches on an ornament, a homemade ornament. And the ornament looks like I think it's a mistletoe, or maybe it's a piece of holly with berries on it or something. And it says Brianna's First Christmas, 1948. And then we go to the first scene of the show, which is an operating room. Claire and Joe Abernathy, as well as several other surgeons, are all in the throes of a really intense surgery. Claire seems to be the lead surgeon. She's in there really getting in this woman's abdomen, trying to do something. And everybody's concerned because the woman's blood pressure is dropping. Claire is trying to do a specific thing, and Joe is looking at her, and he's like, her blood pressure's dropping. We need to hurry up and finish this up. And Claire's like, I just need a few more seconds. And Joe's like, we don't have a few more seconds. And she's like, just one then. And he looks at the woman's blood pressure. It's hovering around 70 and dropping. And then Claire finds this, I guess, a bleeder. The woman is apparently bleeding. And Claire manages, she pulls something out of the woman, and then she manages to find the bleeder and asks Joe to tie it off. He does. And then the woman's blood pressure begins to increase. So she's okay. So Claire was successful with her surgery, and she looks at Joe, giving him this look. By the way, they're all wearing masks, of course, so you can only see them communicate with their eyes. Claire's eyes look at Joe and give him this "I told you" look. And Joe looks at her like he's all proud and impressed by her skill. So it's really cool to see them as their friendship has developed, and you see that they can now they have the friendship that's so close that they can communicate with their eyes without saying a word. So then in the next scene, we switch to Brianna in class at the university at Harvard, and she's apparently in history class. The history teacher is reciting the first lines of Paul Revere's Ride, and he's, you know, "Listen, my children, and you shall hear the midnight ride of Paul Revere." So, of course, we've all heard that in high school and wherever. But he says that this is an interesting poem, interesting tale. It's just that it's a lie. He said Paul Revere did ride that night, but he had two people with him. Samuel Prescott and William something or another. I forgot. I'm sorry. I forget the names. See, it's not going to be perfect, guys. Okay. But it'll you know, we'll go back and well, no, we're not going to go back. You know who it is. Anyway, he says Paul Revere only made it to Livingston, but he was captured by the Redcoats, and that Prescott was the one who finished the ride. Why wasn't Prescott mentioned in the poem, or why wasn't he noted in history? He said that Paul Revere had a better publicist. So the college kids laughed, and then he releases everybody, and he asks Brianna, can he speak to her after class? So she stays behind. He says to her that she is failing, that he knew that she was doing really well last term or whatever, but now she's not doing so well. He talked to her other professors, found out she's doing poorly in her other classes as well. He asked her what's going on. She says, maybe I'm just not as smart as everybody thought I was. He's like, that's not true. You wouldn't be at Harvard if that were the case. And then he says, look, your father was my friend, and I told him I'd look after you. And I just have to tell you, if you don't straighten out and get this corrected, you're not going to last long here. So, you know, she says, all right. And she doesn't seem to be that concerned about it. By the way, during the class, rather than her paying attention to the professor, she's actually sketching on a piece of paper. She's drawing, looks like a building with pillars. And she's obviously very distracted. So we switch to Brianna in the next scene, arriving to a darkened house. She's home, and she walks in, and she's, I guess her spirits are down after that little powwow with her professor. So she's kind of walking in, the Christmas tree's up. She goes to the tree. She sees her special ornament, Brianna's first Christmas. She looks at it, and she goes over to her dad's desk. She starts, looking through stuff there. She sees his pipe. And then she looks through some old photos that he had. And there's this one photo of him embracing her as a baby. And looks like he's just sniffing her head or something, or giving her a big kiss, whatever he's doing. Whatever it is, it's a really affectionate embrace. And she looks really, you know, her lip trembles. She looks a little sad and emotional seeing that. So in the next scene, we have Claire looking at a picture of Brianna. Looks like she's looking thoughtful, and she's apparently in her office, which apparently her and Joe Abernathy have a shared office. She has a good desk and he has a desk, and it's like Joe Abernathy is essentially her work husband. That's what, you know, how people have like a work friend or a work person that they're just so close to, especially if he's someone of the opposite sex. Doesn't mean you're having an affair with him. It just means that this is your partner. This is your buddy. I mean, even in that surgery, I mean, she was like clamping stuff. He was closing it up with the needle and thread, you know, with the stitches. So, you know, they were a team. And so, you know, I guess it even goes into their office environment, because they have like, you know, an office that they share. So anyway, Joe asks her, how was her trip to Scotland? He was there, of course. He asks her, you know, interrupting her melancholy thoughts about Brianna, apparently. And he asks her how her trip to Scotland was. And she said, oh, it was fine. I'm okay, guys, I want you to understand. You probably have picked this up now. I paraphrase a lot. I don't get the words exactly right. I don't get the conversation exactly right. So don't, you know, sue me. You know, I had someone criticize me about that, but I'm like, look, I paraphrase. Just understand that and just move on. Anyway, so he asked her how the trip was, and she said it was fine. And, you know, she said, well, something happened, you know, but, you know, I don't really want to talk about it. He said, what? Did you meet a man, Lady Jane? That's what he calls her, Lady Jane. And she says, well, I kind of reconnected with someone that I once knew. And he was like, really? How'd that go? She's like, well, I was hoping that we could. She said, well, we had parted ways years ago, but I was hoping that we could reconnect. But fate had other things in mind. And Joe just said flat out, fuck fate. And she smiled. They were having drinks, too, by the way. They drank all the time. Back in the 60s, folks just drank all the time, didn't they? Must have been nice. Anyway, someone came in and interrupted their conversation, a nurse, I believe, bringing some reports in. So Claire took that as her cue to leave. She said, Joe, I'm calling it a night, or that's my, you know, I'm off the clock, I think were her words. He was like, okay, but this conversation isn't over. And she looked at him like, mm-hmm. So she left. So then we move to the next scene where we see a yellow taxi pulling up outside their apartment, and Roger climbs out to the music, to the background music of Show Me by Joe Tex. I remember that song. I wasn't born in that year. I was actually born a little bit later than that, but I remember my dad loving this song. So this was a song that got played a lot in my house because my dad loved it. But anyway, to the really funky music of Joe Tex, Show Me Your Man. But Roger's nervous, you know, he's arriving. He's like, oh God, I hope I'm not doing something stupid. Well, too late to turn back now. Cab driver is not trying to hear it. He's like, hey, $2.50. So Roger pays him, goes up to the front of the house to ring the doorbell. As soon as he rings the doorbell, he hears their voices coming from inside yelling, Claire and Bree's voices. And he's like even more, you know, embarrassed now because he's like, oh God, I'm showing up at this horrible time. You know, so Brianna opens the door, swinging it open like, what? Until she notices that it's Roger. And then she has a shocked look on her face. He's like, happy Christmas. So he comes in. He's really mortified. He hates that he's interrupted, whatever it is that he's interrupting. Claire is inside. She's surprised to see him. Brianna's like, hey, look who's here. It's Roger. And Claire's like, oh my God, it's so good to see you. But she's obviously just more shocked than anything. She gives him a kiss. He's like, I'm sorry, I should have called first. She's like, nonsense. We're happy to have you. You know, he said, this is obviously a bad time. And Claire said, oh, we weren't doing anything. And Brianna says, we were yelling. And then Claire says, yeah, we were yelling about you dropping out of Harvard. And now moving out. And Roger looks at Brianna, and Brianna's like, yeah, I can do that, you know, and it's my decision. And Claire's like, look, let me just call your professor so we can get you reinstated. She said, no, you're not listening to me. I'm tired. I am not the same person that I was before I left or whatever. Apparently, what she's saying is that the whole trip to Scotland and everything that she learned about Jamie and, you know, her father or who she thought was her father, this has all had a really serious effect on her. And she just now wants to do something else. I mean, because like I said, we saw her in the classroom while the professor was talking about history, and she's drawing. She was in the classroom. She was actually drawing on a sketch pad, like some architecture or something. So she's distracted, and her mind is on other things. So I guess now she just wants a change of space or scenery. So she wants to drop out of school, and Claire doesn't like it, but oh well. Since she's an adult, she can do that. So Roger, he's just standing there looking all like, oh my God, you know, I've shown up at the worst possible time. But Brianna grabs her box that she's, cause her ride shows up and she's like, look, I gotta go. She picks her box up with her things in it, and she looks at Roger. I'll see you tomorrow. We'll hang out. And he's like, okay. And she leaves. So she leaves Roger there with Claire. So Claire and Roger just sit down and have dinner. You know, they talk about, you know, why he came, you know, a little bit about, and he says something about, well, I just wanted to experience American Christmas. And Claire, she's like, you didn't really come here for an American Christmas. And he's like, is it that obvious? She's like, yeah, it is. But I'm glad that you're here because Brianna doesn't have anyone else really to talk to who knows what she's going through. And he's like, yeah, okay. But he's like, and then they decide after dinner to move on to the living room and have a little whiskey. And when they're doing that, he's like, look, I found something. I just want you to see. And she's like, what's that? And he goes into his attaché case. But as he's doing this, he's like, look, I am a researcher, or I am a historian. This is what I do. I'm like a dog with a bone when I need to find something. So he pulls out this article that he found that was written by someone from 1765, I believe it was. Or 1760. No, it was 1765. And he points out some things in the article that's talking about freedom and whiskey, and then some other quote that was from someone that was not even an adult at the time that that article was written. She's like, well, you know, that person was alive at the time, because Claire was kind of living in denial because, of course, Roger was saying that this is obviously Jamie. But she was like, no, that doesn't prove anything. The freedom and whiskey thing, well, okay, maybe. And then he pointed to another quote and she said, well, that person was alive at the time, so it's possible. But he's like, but the person was six. So not likely that he got that from them. This is obviously someone who's quoting stuff that he couldn't possibly have known unless he was from the future. And then he said, look, who's the printer? The writer is not the person, but the printer is named A. Malcolm. Alexander Malcolm. Those are two of Jamie's names. And Claire was like, oh God, okay, look, I didn't need this right now. So she shockingly gets upset. She said, I didn't ask you to do this. So, you know, this is like really real, because Roger's like, these are Jamie's middle names, Alexander Malcolm. Those are Jamie's middle names. And printed in 1765, that was just according, because they had the timeline on the bulletin board and they were comparing the parallel times. They said 1765 parallel to the time that they are currently in was only a year ago. So basically it means that they had proof that Jamie was alive within 1 year of their current timeline. So if Claire were to go back now, the likelihood of Jamie being still alive is very, very good. So Claire starts to freak out. She's like, I closed the door on this 20 years ago and I can't do this again. And what about Brianna? She's coming up with every excuse in the book. She's like, I can't leave Brianna. Brianna needs me. Roger's like, well, I understand, but you know, just letting you know, this is something that you can do. This is concrete evidence. You know, this isn't just, you know, a shot in the dark like the stuff before. This is 1 year, you know, ago proof that Jamie was alive. So if you go back now, there's a strong possibility that he's still there. So Claire asks Roger to keep it to himself. Don't tell Brianna. This will only confuse matters if she knows about this. And he says that he will not tell her. He won't say a word. So then they show, Claire is in her, I guess, robe. She's ready for bed, but she's up late at night, dark. You can see Christmas lights, I guess, in the background. And she's, I don't know if she's in her bedroom or her living room, but anyway, she's playing with her Scotch pearls that Jamie had gave her, and she's reflecting. And then we switch to the next scene where Claire is back at work with Joe in their office. Joe has a bunch of old bones from a long departed person all over his desk. And Claire is like, "What's this?" And Joe's like, "This is some bones that a friend of mine wants me to give my opinion on, a second opinion." So he's putting it together. He puts the skull and the jaw together and he says, "This is a woman, probably late 40s, you know." And Claire picks up the skull and looks at it and she says, "Why does your friend want you to give him an opinion about a murder victim?" And Joe looks at her shocked. And it's like, "How do you know that she was a murder victim?" And Claire looks uncomfortable for a moment and she shrugs. She's like, "I don't know. I just do. It's just a feeling." And Joe's like, "Well, my friend wants me to give him my opinion as to the cause of death. You don't have any specific reason why you said that?" And she's like, "No, not really." And then he takes some other bones out of the box and he says she was found in a cave in the Caribbean. And and she was found with other artifacts and he's putting everything on the desk. And he picks up two, I guess, vertebrae bones and he looks at them closely and he says, "Wow, looks like you were right. This woman was murdered. Looks like someone tried to cut her head off." And Claire looks uncomfortable, you know, and he says, "This is not a slave," because I think his friend had initially thought it was a slave, but because of the shortness or length or whatever of her leg bone, he could tell that this was a white woman. And so apparently an older white woman was killed in a cave in the Caribbean. Claire had guessed 150 years ago, but Joe corrected her and said, "You're off about 50 years. It's 200 years ago." So keep that in your Rolodex, guys. Anyway, he then asks her, "So tell me, you know, we're supposed to finish this conversation about your man in Scotland." So then Claire is like, "Well, this is actually Bree's father, her real father. And when we went to Scotland, I told Bree about him. And, you know, she didn't know, of course, thinking Frank was her father. And that's kind of why she's struggling so much right now." And Joe approaches her, you know, almost like a father or a big brother or something like that. And he sits with her and he says, "I'm glad you told me." It explains a lot. And he says, "So do you still love this man?" And Claire says, "I never stopped." And he says, "I've watched you live a half life for 15 years. Nobody thought that you and Frank were Ozzy and Harriet. And if you have a second chance at love, you should go for it. And Bree will get over it." And she looked at him and she says, "Thank you so much, Joe." So then in the next scene, we switch to Roger sitting on the couch watching Dark Shadows at the apartment. Bree shows up and she says, "Are you kidding me? You're watching Dark Shadows?" And he's like, "Yeah, I'm all into it. You know, Victoria's, you know, I don't know." He's trying to explain the show to her. I don't know what the heck he said about it. I don't know. Anyway, Brianna was like, "What would the people in Princeton think about you rotting your brain with American television?" He's like, "They'll just have to get over it because I'm enjoying this." That's a paraphrase, guys. I know that's not exactly what he said. Anyway, she comes and sits next to him and says, "I'm sorry about yesterday." And he says, "That's okay." And she says, "Look, my father has this thing at Harvard," or they're having a thing for my father, or memory of my father at Harvard later today, honoring him or some of his work. "And would you like to accompany me? And while we're at it, you know, I can show you the sights." And he's like, "Sure." By the way, I forgot to mention that he had told her that he was there to enjoy an American Christmas and get lobster rolls and eat Boston cream pie. And she said, "Oh, I can help you with that. I can hook you up." So then we switch to the scene where Brianna is showing. So then we skip to the next scene where Brianna is showing Roger the Robinson Coysters, I think is how she pronounced it and said that it was the only, her exact words, I'm going to try to quote it here. Her exact words were, the only example of Gothic revival on campus. Don't ask me what that is. It was some pillars, looked very Gothic, and she was walking around underneath and showing it to him, and he was very impressed by it, thinking of how historical this was and all of the great people that have come through here and all of the conversations that have probably been had. And he asked her, don't you think about that? And she's like, no, I never did. I just thought about the architecture and how it was built. She said, every time my father brought me here, that's basically all that impressed me about it. And Roger then told her a story about his own father, his real father, because of course the Reverend was not his real father. It was a nice story about, I don't really recall the whole thing. And Brianna was like, don't you think the Reverend probably made that up just to make you feel better? And Roger's like, well, maybe, but what does it matter? And she's like, because history is unreliable. It's just a story. She's like, you know, like the Bonnie Prince and like Paul Revere. She's like my parents. She says, history is just a story. It's not true necessarily. So obviously, Brianna is expressing her dislike now for history, or she's now become associated, or she's just not interested in history anymore. She's a history major who no longer cares about history. And we are now getting to see the beginnings of her being more interested in engineering and architecture and how things work, how things are built. So this is how we're now seeing how she falls out of that whole historical stuff that she was studying and maybe begins to become more interested in something more along the lines of engineering or architecture. We will see how that develops, because of course in the book she has a specific career. Not going to get into that. That's something that's in the future. but we'll see how that develops with her. So anyway, the next scene is everyone, including Claire and all of the faculty, at this little event that they're holding in Frank's honor to celebrate his work. And there's this gentleman who's speaking. And then after the pomp and circumstance, everyone is having drinks and just kind of talking. And then the man who had, was the MC or whatever of the event, Claire approaches him and says that she thinks it's wonderful how he's honoring Frank like this. And he says it's the least he could do after everything Frank's done for the university. And right then there's this person that passes by them, and she's familiar, but she's walking past him like she don't see him. And then he calls to her, Professor whatever, I don't even recall her name, it's not important. You better have that paperwork on my desk soon, you know. You have to, you know, get that to me. It's important. And she's like, oh, I'll have it to you first thing Monday. So Claire notices at this point that this is Frank's girlfriend. This is his boo thing. The one that we met when he let her come to the house during Claire's graduation. Apparently now she's a professor. And the man introduces them. He says, Claire, this is a professor whatever. She is one of Frank's former students. And she says to Claire, nice to meet you, as if she's never met her. And Claire says, yeah, okay. So then the gentleman excuses himself somehow. And then Boothang, she says, Frank would have hated all this. And Claire says, I don't know, I think he would have loved it. And the woman says, he said it was always about the work. And Claire was like, yeah, okay, I don't really want to talk to you. That's not what she said. But she says, excuse me for a minute. And she starts to walk off. And the woman says, you should have let him go. When she called after Claire, she says, you should have let him go. Claire comes back to her, excuse me. And the woman's like, I can't remember everything she said. Essentially, she was basically says that Claire held on for him for 20 years, didn't want him. She wanted him. Claire wouldn't let him go. And he told her that he only stayed for Brianna. But the woman says, I knew that wasn't true. There was still a part of him that loved Claire, that always would, no matter how much she continued to hurt him. And she said, you could have walked away, but you were selfish. You wanted it all, you know, and she says, I would give anything. She said, you wasted 20 years of y'all's lives over a lie. And I would give anything to have one day back with him. And so Claire was like, okay, you know, I ain't staying here listening to this. She walked off, or the woman walked off. No, I think the woman walked off after she said her piece. And Claire basically stood there looking stunned. And then we see across the room that Brianna and Roger have witnessed this exchange. And then we cut to Claire and Brianna after this event, you know, kind of walking the halls. And Brianna asked Claire, that blonde woman you were talking to, mother, who was that? And Claire says, one of your father's former students. And Brianna was like, yeah, she looks familiar. I remember being with Dad at a bookstore, and he approached her. She was there, and Dad approached her, and he was talking to her. And he was looking at her in this way that was just like he used to look at you. And Claire looked uncomfortable, and Brianna was like, Mom, at the Standing Stones, you told me that there would be no more lies. We agreed there would be no more lies. And Claire was like, okay. They were together. He loved her. They were together for many years, and he actually planned on marrying her. And Brianna was like, you know, Dad had to look at me every day and see the man that you were once with, because you said that I looked just like Jamie. He must have really hated me, referring to Frank, you know. And Claire was like, oh, no, darling, never. He loved you. If anything in this life was important to Frank, it was you. And you were his purpose. You were his whole reason for being, you know. So, you know, she tried to make it very clear that there was no way that Frank could ever hate her or dislike her in any way. You know, she was his world. That was the only reason that he was even in the marriage, was because of her. And then Brianna was like, well, what about you, Mom? I mean, I'm the reason you lost Jamie. You must resent me. And Claire was like, never. What I resented was having to leave Jamie, but you, I've always loved you. The first time that I held you, the first time that I nursed you, I've never felt anything like that in my life. And, you know, she wanted to make it very clear that there was never any animosity or hatred for her child. It was just the inability of being with Jamie that she was miserable about. And Brianna was like, well, do you still think of him? And Claire says, all the time. And she says, let me show you something. And she pulls out the article that Roger had showed her. So she decides to tell Brianna about the incident after she asked Roger not to. But I guess she figured this was the right moment to share this information with Brianna. So when Brianna looks at the article and sees the name Alexander Malcolm, she's like, this is Jamie. Oh my God, he's alive in 1765. And she looks at Claire. She says, you can go back. And Claire says, no, I didn't show you that because of that. I wanted to be honest with you, but my life is here with you. And Brianna was like, okay, I am a grown woman now. I'm not a little girl anymore. I love you, but I don't need you. Not like I did when I was a baby. Say, you can go back and be with Jamie. I can take care of myself. So Claire smiles at her and they walk off. Then we jump to the next scene where Claire is, you know, at the hospital, decked out in her lab coat with her little butterfly pin on the lapel, and where she's surrounded by staff, including Joe. And they're all watching the moon landing, Apollo 8, you know. And this is a big, you know, of course, serious time because this had never happened before in history. So they're all watching, you know, with bated breath. And Joe, of course, as profound as always, says, how do you take a trip like that and then come back to your life as it was or as you knew it? And Claire kind of looks at him and then she starts thinking, and then we can hear her narrating voice in her head as she says that she's been, in a way, further than the moon, you know, because she's been to another time. And it is possible for you to take a trip like that and come back to your life, but it's never going to be the same. And then once the moon landing is over and they all start to disperse, she goes to the window and looks at the moon and, you know, is reflecting on what it is that she wants to do. I think her narrating voice says, maybe just having gone once is enough, you know, because most people can't even say that they've ever done anything like that. So essentially she's just trying to, you know, weigh the pros and cons. Should she go? Should she not go? So then we switch to Claire and Brianna at home. They're sitting on the couch and Claire is explaining to Brianna that if she decides to do this, if she decides to go back, that they may never see each other again. And Brianna was like, but you've done this before. And Claire says, there's never any guarantees. And she says, the idea of her leaving and never seeing Brianna get married or have children, to never hold her first grandchild, she don't know if she can live with that. And she asked Brianna if she could. And Brianna was like, well, Mom, I've been spending so much time trying to see whether or not I'm more Randall than Fraser. But what I know that I am is more you than either of my fathers. And she says, if I can be half the woman that you are, then I'm going to be just fine. And Claire smiles. And then she says, she smiles and then she lowers her head. And then Brianna says, well, there's more to it than just that. And Claire says, what if he has forgotten me? So now we're getting to what the real issue has been, or one of the bigger issues has been, that Claire's been afraid to voice, I think, out loud, is that she thinks Jamie might have forgotten her. And what if he doesn't love her anymore? And Brianna is like, you said that you guys had the kind of love that is just uncomparable. There's nothing like it. Don't you think that he feels the same? And Claire says, I hope so. Or something along those lines. And Brianna is like, well, then it's probably still that way. You have nothing to worry about. She says, Mom, I took you away from Jamie. And now I have to give you back. And you know who doesn't know me? She says, my father doesn't know me. Jamie doesn't know me. So you need to go back and tell him everything. So then we cut to, I think, probably one of the cutest scenes, or the cutest scene of the episode, which is Claire at the hospital, and she sees Joe, and she says, Joe, I need to talk to you for a minute. So they go to their joined office, and Joe is like, okay, what's the case? And she's like, no, it's no case. I just want to ask you a question. am I attractive?
And Joe, you know, he's shuffling through his desk, and then he looks at her like, say what? And she says, sexually. He's like, is this a trick question? She says, no. She says, I really want to know, and you're the only man that I can ask this question. And he's like, okay. He says something, but I can't recall what he says. And he says, oh, okay, this is what he says. He says, is this about your man? And she says, I haven't seen him in 20 years. And you have to answer, you have to tell me seriously, have I changed that much in the 15 years since you've known me? And he kind of laughs and he's like, Lady Jane, you're a skinny white broad, I think he said, with too much hair and a great ass. He'll be in heaven when he sees you. And she kind of smirks and she says, okay, that's what I needed to know. Thanks. He says, no problem. I like the way he did it. So matter of factly, then he starts to leave, gets his coat and his scarf, and he sees that she's staring at him. He goes, what? And she says, nothing. Just thank you, Joe. He said, my pleasure, and left. So that was a cute scene. I enjoyed that. In the book, it was kind of really much the same. So then we cut to Claire, Roger, and Bree sitting in front of the Christmas tree. And Roger and Bree are giving Claire her Christmas presents. We start with Bree giving Claire a box of silver coins that she can take with her when she goes to Edinburgh. And Claire says, yeah, these will come in handy. Looks like a lot of money, too. So she'll be, probably a little bit on the well-off side when she gets there. So then Roger gives her a book called Scotland the Nation. And Claire's like, I could have used this one the first time around. And then Bree gives her another small gift. And Claire opens it, and it's a necklace with a topaz pendant on it. And Claire's like, oh, Bree, this is your birthstone. And, Bree says, yeah, I remember you said you needed a stone, a jewel, when you go through the stones. And Claire said, yes. The first time I went through, I lost my jeweled watch. Then when I came back, I lost the stone from Jamie's father's ring. So I guess I'll need this one going through this time. So then Claire tells them, and I'm also going to be taking some things that I borrowed from the hospital, some surgery tools and some penicillin. And Roger said, sweet, or something along those lines. And Claire says, I figured that 1765 could use them a lot more than 1968. So then she's looking around at all the stuff that she has. She says, where am I going to put all this stuff? And Brianna says, I think, where are you going to put all this stuff? And Claire says, well, I'll have to make something. And Brianna says, make it, you? And Claire says, I made your costumes and pageant dresses for 15 years. I think I can hook this up. And Roger was like, oh, that'll be so cool. So you'll have a utility belt just like the Cape Crusader. And Bree, in this very cheesy way, looks at Roger and says, you really do watch a lot of TV. And I just remember thinking, gosh, she sounds like Laura Ingalls from Little House on the Prairie or some stuff. Is really, I don't know, really weird. I don't know. It just gave me a weird vibe. Anyway, in the next scene, we see Claire in this really unrealistic montage sewing. And I know that they're pressed for time. They can't really, show that this sort of outfit would probably have taken her a week at best to put together. But she manages to put it together in one evening. And she's sewing. And they're playing Batman, by the way, from the original TV show Batman, the music from Batman. So it's like, dun, 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 dun. It's really cool. So she's doing her sewing while Batman is playing. And she's yawning and she's rubbing her eyes like, oh, my God, I'm slaving over this sewing machine for hours and hours and hours. And then at the end of it, she has a whole outfit with a coat and everything. I'm like, that's freaking amazing for one night, I must say. So then in the next scene, we see Claire staring at herself in the mirror. She's smoothing her hand over her cheeks and her chin, looking, I guess, at her face to see, well, not I guess, she is checking out her face, I guess to see how she might have changed or aged. And then she starts pulling her bobby pins out of her hair and she's looking at the gray streaks. And then we switch to the next scene where she's packing up her utility kit with all of her surgery instruments in it and syringes. And Bree and Roger walk in and they notice that she's dyed her hair. And Bree's like, "You dyed your hair." And Claire's like, "Yeah, just touched up the gray. Help from Miss Clairol." And Roger says, "It looks very natural." And Bree says, "You look great." So Roger looks and sees that her outfit is on the dressmaker's dummy. And he says, "Is that it?" He's looking all excited like a little boy. And she's like, "Yeah." She said, "I sewed in these extra pockets so I could put everything in it." And she stuffs it. I think looks like little bottles of penicillin. And she stuffs it in the pockets. And then she says, "You know, the hem's a mess. And one of the arms is longer than the other. But I did the best I could." And Brianna's like, "No one's going to care. No one's going to notice. It looks great." So Claire starts putting her outfit in her suitcase. And then Roger says, "We need one more thing and I'll get it. Be right back." And he runs off. And Claire looks after him and then looks at Brianna and says, "He's a good one." And Brianna says, "I know." So then Claire picks up some documents and hands them to Bree. And she's saying, "Here is my letter of resignation. Give this to Joe Abernathy. He'll know what to do with it. And here is the deed to the house. It's now in your name, along with all of the bank accounts." And Bree takes the stuff from her and looks at her and is like, "I can't believe you're not letting me go to Scotland with you." Because she doesn't want to go through the stone. She just wants to go to Scotland, you know, to wish her off, to see her off. But Claire's like, "No, I want to do it this way. It has to be this way because the first time I went through the stones, it was terrifying and confusing. The second time I went through the stones, it was heartbreaking. This time I want it to be peaceful. And the only way for me to do that is to do it this way alone. Because if you were to go with me and I had to say goodbye to you there, I might not go." So Brianna hugs her. And, you know, tells her, "I love you. Find my father." And then give him this. And she gives Claire a kiss on the cheek. And Claire's like, "I want to give you something as well." So she reaches and picks up the little jewelry bag, pulls out the Scottish pearls, and puts them on Brianna and says, "These were given to me by Jamie on my wedding night to him. You can wear them for your wedding as well." And Brianna says, "They're beautiful," and they kiss and hug again. Roger shows up again, and he's got some whiskey with him. Always with a drink with Roger. He loves that stuff. So anyway, you know, Claire says to him, "Thank you for being a dog with a bone," gives him a kiss and a hug. And then Roger's like, "Well, let's have a wee nip for the road." And he pours three glasses of whiskey, hands them out to them. And Brianna toasts to freedom and whiskey. And they clink glasses. And then in the next scene, you see Claire going down the stairs outside and going to her yellow cab. She looks back at one point, sees Bree and Roger in the window. She waves, gets in a cab, and then drives off. Brianna turns from the window into Roger's arms, crying. And he's comforting her. So then he asks her, "Are you okay?" She says, I'm all right. And she says, "Stay right here." She goes into the kitchen and she cries just a little bit more, wipes her eyes though, wipes away the tears, picks up a tray. Well, no, she puts a Santa hat on. Then she picks up a tray and carries it out. And Roger looks at it and he says, "Is that Boston cream pie and lobster rolls?" She's like, "Yep, told you I'd hook you up." So then they go to the couch and sit down. And she says, "And later on, we can watch a Charlie Brown Christmas." He's like, "Why?" And she's like, "That's your new American Christmas tradition." And so he says, "I have a present for you." So he takes the present from under the tree, sits down next to Bree, gives it to her. She opens it. It's a book. It's A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. She looks at it and then she kisses him. And then they curl up on the couch and Bree takes the book and Roger gets one of the lobster rolls and starts to grub. And Bree starts to read A Christmas Carol. And then we switch to Claire in the cab and we have her narration, her helpful narration in her head. She talks about how when she was little, she used to be scared of stepping on puddles because she couldn't be convinced that the puddle was just a puddle instead of being something much deeper, leading into some sort of alternate universe. And she was afraid that if she stepped on the puddle, she'd end up in some alternate universe somewhere. And then they show her stepping out of the cab or getting ready to step out of the cab, and there's a puddle on the ground. And then the scene switches from her stepping into a really kind of filthy puddle on a very old cobblestone street. And the camera pans up and she's in her old outfit that she made, her homemade outfit, and her hair has been de-sixtified, whatever you want to call it, because of course Claire has had this serious 60s extremely spritz with hairspray hair, and I guess she washed all that out and now she's back to her soft curls and her hair's in a bun. She's got no makeup on and she's looking up at the sky and then looking around at all the people, and she's back in old 18th century Scotland, and it's 1865. She's in Edinburgh. So she gets out of the carriage and starts to walk down the street. She's kind of looking around, observing. She asks a young boy who is coming towards her, does he know the printer, Alexander Malcolm? He says, "Yes, ma'am, right down the street, down that way." And she thanks him. She goes down where the boy indicated. She finds the storefront. She sees the sign, she runs her hand over it, and then she enters the shop. The bell rings over the door as she enters, and we can hear a voice off in the distance inside the store or inside the print shop. "Is that you, Jordy?" It's obviously Jamie. "So where'd you go to get the ash?" You know, or something. Well, that was a little later. But anyway, she's slowly walking through there, approaching the voice. She walks towards the back of the shop. And she's like on this kind of like a first level. And the back of the shop kind of dips down into another area. So it's down on a lower level. And she can see the back of a man in a white shirt and black vest and trousers with red hair tied back and a little pigtail. And then he's holding up some papers. He's looking at them, apparently freshly printed, perhaps. And he says, "Where'd you go to get that ash?" And somewhere, you know, I don't know. He says something kind of snarky, I guess, because Jordy, who he thinks he's talking to, has taken a long time to get some equipment or something that he needed. And then Claire smiles and says, "It's not Jordy. It's me." And Jamie raises his head. His back is turned this whole time, by the way. And he slowly turns. And then we see his face. And then he looks up
at this second level, and he sees her standing there looking over, looking down at him, and she smiles. And I think she says, "I'm back," or something along those lines. And he's looking up with this stunned look on his face, and then collapses in a dead heap on the floor. Now, in the book, it's described as graceful for such a man his size. Now, this was pretty clunky, but it was hilarious and it was adorable. And that was the end of the episode. Well, of course, with Claire's shocked face at him passing out. And then the end, it cuts to credits. And that was so good. That was such a great, great episode. I'm not going to make a whole lot of book comparisons because actually, I will make some book comparisons. In the book, this whole thing with her coming in and then saying it's me, that's pretty much how it went down. But he didn't faint right away. He actually stared at her. And then she observes his face and she says, "Your nose, what happened to it?" She can tell by the look of his nose, apparently, that it has been broken and maybe reset and maybe it was a little crooked. And she said, "When did you break it?" I think. And he says, "About 5 minutes after I last saw you, Sasanek." And he's staring really dreamily at her. And then she approaches him. And I think she reaches to touch his nose. And when her hand makes contact with his face, he jerks. And he scrambles back and says, "Holy God, you're real." And she says, "Of course I'm real." And then he passes out because he thought he was having one of those visions. Like he had, like you remember when he was bringing the whole stag to Lollybrock and he thought Jenny was Claire and he saw her and then Jenny was like, "You scared the bowels out of me." And then, of course, Jamie realized that he was just having another vision. So it was like that. But at any rate, that was my one good book comparison that I will do. Anyway, guys, I really enjoyed the episode. It was great. I would give this a really high score as far as how they adapted it into the show from the book. I said in the last episode of my show that I thought there was going to be some stuff that happened in this episode. Didn't happen, so I guess they're going to handle that differently. It still has to happen though because it's a big part of the story, so maybe it'll be next episode. I guess we'll see. Anyway, that's it for me, guys. I am out of here. And check me out next Sunday when we will be reviewing A. Malcolm. Talk to you then. Laters.